pretty busy schedules these days. We could start while everybody is still eating, and feel free to keep eating to finish your lunch. And I wanted to just welcome you all to today's joint meeting of the Policy Advisory Council and the Commission. And as you know, when we brought the various advisory committees together to form the Policy Advisory Council, our goal was to really increase communication between the Commission and the Council. You are our advisors, and we deeply appreciate the time and the energy and the talents that you bring to this process, because your input is very important to us. And so we wanted to establish that we've done now for several years this process of sitting down together at the beginning of each year to kind of talk about what we've accomplished together in this past year, and then to look towards the direction for the coming year. And I'm really pleased to be joined also by our commission vice chair, Dave Cortese, who will be taking up the helm of MTC next year. So this continuity is you know, very important in terms of our moving forward on the issues. And so I wanted to begin with some self introductions, and if I may, I'll begin again. My name is Amy Wirth. I'm chair, and also I represent the cities of Contra Costa on the commission. So if I may turn to Bijan to begin.
I'm Bijan Sartipi. I'm the Caltrans District Director representing the California State Transportation Agency.
Ursula Vogler, MTC staff.
Hi, Bill Dodd, Napa County Supervisor, and representing the cities and the counties of Napa. County of Napa.
I'm Adrian Tissier, San Mateo County Supervisor, representing San Mateo County.
Kathleen Baker, Policy Advisory Council Chair, and representing low-income populations in San Mateo County.
Scott Wiener, MTC, representing San Francisco County, and my name tag appears to have walked away, so hopefully it'll come back.
I'm Chris Corsi from the Policy Advisory Council, representing the environmental community in Sonoma County.
Jerry Levine, Policy Advisory Council, representing the economy, San Francisco.
Ben Schwang, I own and operate a bicycle shop in the city of Hayward. I'm the environmental representative for Alameda County.
Dave Cortese, Vice Chair, MTC, Santa Clara County.
Doreen Giacopini, U.S. Department of Transportation representative on MTC.
Linda Jeffrey-Sailors, I'm on the Advisory Council, and I'm representing environment in the Tri-Valley area, which is always very interesting.
Richard Burnett, Policy Advisory Council, representing the minority interests of Solano County.
Hi, I'm Carlos Castellanos with the Policy Advisory Council, and I'm representing Alameda County Low Income.
Naomi Armenta with the Policy Advisory Council, representing the disabled community of Alameda County.
I'm Steve Heminger, MTC's Executive Director.
There you are. Hi, I'm Jim Blackston. I'm from San Francisco. I'm involved in the field of real estate, now going forward as a sales agent. I represent disabled people in the city and county of San Francisco.
My name is Jack Gray. I'm a resident of Napa County, representing all of Napa County taxpayers and interested in the economy of our local community.
Alan Talansky, Policy Advisory Council, San Mateo County Economy. I'm Executive Vice President of Development at EBLNS Development.
Randy Kinman, I am Vice Chair of the Policy Advisory Council, and I represent the low-income community of Santa Clara County.
Good afternoon. I'm Vita Flores from Marin County, and I'm a marketing consultant representing the minority concerns of Marin County.
Martha Silver, and I'm the Council Secretary.
Elizabeth Clary with the Policy Advisory Council. I represent people with disabilities in Sonoma County.
Joanne Busenbark, Policy Advisory Committee, representing seniors in Napa County.
Gerald Rico, Napa County, representing minority issues in Napa County.
Will Dinn, member of the Policy Advisory Council, representing San Francisco minority community.
Sandy Galvez, Policy Advisory Council, representing the environment in Alameda County.
Bob Glover, I'm the Executive Officer of the Building Industry Association of the Bay Area. I'm an economy representative on the Policy Advisory Council from Contra Costa County.
Mark Luce from Napa County, representing taxpayers, minorities, environmental groups, economy groups, and appointed by the Association of Bay Area Government.
I'm Ann Halstead. I represent the Bay Conservation and Development Commission on the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, and I live in San Francisco.
Scott Haggerty, Alameda County Supervisor.
Jim Sparring, Solano County Supervisor and MTC Commissioner.
Great. Well, thank you all very much, and thank you for being here. And you can hear from the introductions that this the Advisory Council is a very important part of what we do, and it reflects the both the geographic as well as the priority diversity of our region. And you play a very important role in advising the Commission and our staff on issues relative to the transportation policies that are under the purview of MTC. And as you know, with the passage of SB 375, our role in the community dialogue has significantly grown, and it's been a real year of engaging the public in that process. One of the important elements of bringing the various advisory committees together and creating the council was to bring together perspectives regarding the environment, the economy, and social equity in one group so that we could have a cohesive dialogue and advice and guidance to the commission as we move through many of the issues that, that we address in terms of planning for future transportation investment in the region. It also provides the opportunity for the council and commissioners at the local geographic level to discuss issues relative to their particular counties. As you know, many of the issues by the time or funding allocations by the time they reach MTC have really been thoroughly discussed at the local level. So it's very important that, that you have the opportunity to engage with your local commissioners as well as provide that input so that it's not only the content area perspective, but a geographic perspective on the various issues that we address. Just in terms of an overview of the advice that you've given us this past year, which again we deeply appreciate, in March you provided feedback on the express lane network, urging us to focus on the conversion of lanes before building new ones, as well as to explore enforcement strategies so the investment that we make can be effective. In the same month, you commented on the PDA feasibility and readiness assessment, recommending that both MTC and ABAG make eligible OBAG funds that reflect the diverse needs of the PDAs. And I think if you could, you've probably seen the reports from the Commission and the updates on how those dollars were spent, and I think we're all very pleased that they really did reflect the priorities that we all collectively had set in terms of investments around the region. And with regards to Plan Bay Area, we received very important ongoing comments from all of you, but this year in particular, you presented comments on the draft while it was out for review, citing the need for clear performance measures and goals in implementing the region's PDAs, anti-displacement policies, and the need to generate revenue perhaps by way of a VMT tax or all-lane freeway tolls. You also suggested a means for reducing the transit capital deficit by shifting freeway performance initiative funds to invest in the transit performance initiative. And in addition, you provided ongoing advice to at the many council meetings and subcommittees that you have held, and we really appreciate the time and effort that you have taken in terms of developing a comprehensive understanding of the issues that are coming forward and providing
us with citizen advice as we go through this process. Again, I think your help on Plan Bay Area was really invaluable. We appreciate your chairs and your vice chairs for coming to our meetings on a monthly basis, providing that report, as well as during the course of the discussions. I think that Plan Bay Area discussions were really a milestone and a watershed in terms of engaging the public from all different geographic and points of view and perspectives on kind of looking at how we want to, what do we see for the future of our region in terms of both land use and transportation investment. So, and I think that your voices during the course of the several years that we took to develop that plan were really instrumental in many of the priorities and many of the actions that are embodied in that plan. So, again, thanks to you all for being involved. Our next item for moving on to item four, which is to focus on council objectives to 2014. The hope is today to just have a discussion in terms of what you see as the priorities are from your perspective in terms of moving forward. You can see we've got some key discussion topics. So I'd like to first turn to Kathleen Baker, our council chair, to offer some comments, and then I know Ursula Vogler, our staff, who's here filling in for Pam Grove, who's home with the flu, to be able to have a discussion and welcome all of your comments as we look to move forward for this coming year.
Well, thank you to Ursula and to you, Chair Worth. So, as I mentioned in my report to the Commission, the Council had a really productive and creative meeting last month that we heard from the Council members they felt really productive and enjoyed. And we had small group report backs, and we think several things were really important, but you'll find those in your packet in detail. What I wanted to touch on were these sort of five highest priorities that really emerged from the small work groups. And the first was really to improve transportation infrastructure, which is largely a carryover of the council from previous years. But this extends broadly to including transportation system, mobility, safety, and reliability, and on some lines, capacity. The second being, obviously, to identify new sources of revenue to support all of those improvements. That's significant, and several different ideas about those potential revenue sources in the vehicle were floated as well. A key theme across all the groups was education and outreach, and just really building that local community perspective and understanding about the role that MTC has, especially the role given SB 375 and the new degree of community engagement that the commission now has to do. Really bringing down the level of jargon on all of that community outreach and making it resonate with local projects. Lastly, as we see a lot of outside entities and stakeholders shaping our transportation system and impacting it, like school districts, corporations who are essentially providing private mass transportation, partnering more so with some of those stakeholders across the region to build on the solutions that they obviously see value in. Another one across all of our groups was safety enhancements, both for, you know, regardless of age and ability, but also to support shifts towards biking and walking to support our GHG strategies. And lastly, but hardly least, was really affordable and workforce housing. That's key to creating or meeting all of our goals. So we're looking forward to kind of building on those five themes and having the conversation today and working together over the year.
Hello, everyone.
Thanks, Ursula.
Sure. I'm Ursula Vogler. I work in the public outreach and planning groups here at MTC. And as a point of hopefully interest, I was the final Elderly and Disabled Advisory Committee staff liaison before it became the Policy Advisory Council. And I'm here today to help facilitate a discussion on the 2014 Policy Advisory Council work plan. For purposes of this discussion, please turn to Attachment 5C. In your packets, it's also shown on the screens. Martha, if you could switch the next slide. The matrix indicates where the advisor's interest on the left column intersect with the commission's interests or work across the top of the chart. We don't anticipate that we will be completing the work plan today. Instead, we're looking to identify what's both important to commissioners and to you advisors. And I'd also like to point out that we have 10 new advisors that started in October of last year. So, commissioners, when you tell the group what's important to you, if you could also tell us the value of the advisory council and how they can best serve you as commissioners. So we have about 40 minutes for the discussion, and I'm going to hand it off to Commissioner Sparing, who's been very kind to kick things off. And then it can be a back-and-forth discussion, so if you have a comment or question for Commissioner Sparing or other commissioners, please just I'll call on you as appropriate. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Ursula. You know, first I want to thank all of you for being here. These meetings are very important. I think, as most of you know, a lot of the decisions that our commission makes comes through the advisory councils and groups that we work with. And so your input is very important. I want to encourage you to, you know, comment today and let us hear from you. You've got many commissioners sitting around this table, and so this is your opportunity for you to, you know, so they can hear what your concerns and issues are and what you would like to see us working on. Amy talked about what we've done over the past couple of years and what we've been working on. I just want to touch a little bit on, you know, what is on MTC's work program in the next year or two. And you're all familiar that we've adopted the Bay Plan Area. We did that last year, and a lot of controversy, a lot of discussion, a lot of input, and you know, you saw a plan that was shaped by various interest groups throughout the region, and I think we came up with a pretty good product. The commission is going to be focusing on the priority development area planning and implementation, the one-day area grant activities, you know, so we'll be bringing that forward, the climate initiative program activities, and monitoring of the performance targets associated with the plan. And so with what both Kathleen and Chair Wirth were talking about, these issues were certainly going to have to be blended in. We look forward to building on our regional goods movement plan. Next year, MTC will be conducting these sub-regional studies to analyze good movements in the I-80, 580, 880 corridors, along with the passenger and freight rail. This is an area that many commissioners felt that we really have to put a little bit more attention into, and I think the commission is going to start focusing on some of these economic issues. The commission certainly realizes that we have to have a healthy economy to be able to accomplish many of the objectives that we have in our plan. We look forward to hearing about the progress of the Bay Area Regional Prosperity Plan, which is slowly coming to a conclusion. We also look forward to improving our freeway and arterial networks, including implementation of the Regional Express Lane Network. You know, as you look at, you know, the corridor that I'm very familiar with, Solano County in the I-80 corridor, that express lane is very critical to moving our commuters in this region in a very efficient way, and it's, you know, it's something that the public's really starting to accept. And last, we'll begin to think about the regional transportation plan, and we'll be looking at starting that plan. Everybody's looking forward to that. That'll be coming forward in 2017, and hopefully we didn't burn everybody out, and we're trying to give them a break. And so it's something that we're all looking forward to. We've learned a lot in this last plan. I think we've learned how to interact with the public and how to do our public hearings. And so I'm hoping that our next plan is going to be a little smoother. And so with that, I certainly encourage everyone to participate in these discussions. And with that, Ursula, I think I'm handing it back to who?
Well, the next, so if someone could just step up and ask a question of Commissioner Sparing or any other commissioners, or maybe state what's important to you and your community, that would be great. I can call on someone, but I'd rather not. Or if another commissioner would like to speak and talk about. Okay, great.
I just have a question as to where the highest level of intersection between the commission and the Policy Advisory Council was, where we have the greatest overlap.
Is that a question to the commissioners? Okay, the greatest overlap.
Yeah, could you be a little more specific? I'm not.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out the prioritization of where we would stand on this chart. So, like, what rises to a higher, or is it just as a timeline as when things come through? Like, the RTP is not going to happen for a while, so that's not a high priority. But on this,
yeah, but I don't know that I kind of disagree. I think it is a high priority. I think that we need to start setting that framework today, and we need to understand what is important to you in this next cycle. We've learned a lot in development of this last plan, and so it would be good to kind of reflect on what had happened. What do you think is important? What's included? What did we overlook? I would. Those are the things I would like to hear. And you know, can we make the plan better? And that's you, the. This is a 4-year cycle. Too many people think that the plan that we adopted is just set in concrete. It's not. It's a very fluid plan, and hopefully we're going to make it better as we go forward. And so this in this next series of meetings.
Good. That's kind of what I wanted to hear. Because for me, it's like once we close that process, it's just we're picking it up and starting all over again. And that's great. And I just wanted to say that I thought that MTC staff, as they grew through the One Bay Area process and the meetings and the public meetings, did an incredible job and are to be commended for their ability to devise the outreach. For me, one of the big issues is all of this depends on funding and money. And so that's a combination of where are we going to get new funds and legislation. So I'd really like to see us developing a little bit more in that area. And my second issue is I'd love to have us have some regional standards on especially our paratransit programs where we're actually talking the same language, where transit training means, and I think MTC can play a large part in standardizing the terms that each individual transit agency uses.
Yeah, that's good input. The other point I wanted to make is that I think it's important that the council realizes that, you know, we didn't always agree, but the commission listened and the commission considered the recommendations that were being made. And so I think that's very important that we make sure that the advisory council knows that we're listening to what you say. And in the areas where we disagreed, I thought we gave a pretty good response as to why we didn't agree. I think we can't move forward ignoring many of the comments that we're hearing. So I think we have a responsibility to respond. And this forum, I think, helps us do that.
Let me take a different tack. I think we met in groups, and I think we came up with a lot of ideas, and some ideas really rang true with me. And let me just go down a short list without a long speech. Number one, we have a problem of funding. Everyone has a problem of funding, and funding is also education. It's educating the public as to why we're doing things and what we need. And I think we really need to outreach more to the public and educate the public as to what the gives and the gets are in transportation and in the PDA areas and in the One Bay Area plan. Not many people really understand it. I'd like to educate the people enough to realize that this is one of the few states in the union that generates energy that doesn't pay a fuel extraction tax. I'm amazed. I'm shocked. And one of the reasons it doesn't is every time we come out with a fuel extraction tax, we have the oil companies that are very powerful in this state spending hundreds of millions of dollars to tell people why this shouldn't happen and how it's going to increase our fuel bill. It isn't. Most of our fuel goes overseas. The fuel is a commodity. We're priced because of the cost of our refinery output. We're talking about billions of dollars a year, part of which can go into transportation, part of which can go into housing. Let me talk about housing for a second. We have a sad condition in this state of low-income housing. I'm a developer, but why should I talk about low-income housing? There's another category of housing we should have, and that should be workforce housing. Workforce housing is for our firemen, emergency service workers who don't happen to be where they need to be when there's an emergency because they can't afford to live in their communities, in most of the communities here. They have to go far away. We have to create, as leaders, the MTC has to create a definition of workforce housing and metrics of workforce housing that can work in this area, as opposed to the lottery system and the waiting list system that we have in below market rate housing. That's a new category of housing. That's something we can show leadership in as the MTC. And I'm going to stop there because I could go on for an hour, and you don't want to hear that. Thank you.
Steve, what other states have a cap and trade that we have here in California with the...
Oh, I'm not talking about cap and trade.
No, I know. The reason I'm bringing that up is that is where funding for the very issues you're talking about should be coming from, but I just wanted to, on the cap and trade.
Well, I don't know what other states have cap and trade, but I know I don't think anyone's effectively come up with a cap and trade system that works, that I know of. It's all talk. Fuel extraction taxes cover a lot of the budget of Louisiana, give each citizen in Alaska $1,200 a year, plus covers a lot of their infrastructure cost. So the fuel extraction tax is something that is very simple.
Yeah.
You pay what's taken out of the ground. And we have a lot of public resources that help take that stuff out of the ground, and a lot of public transportation used in taking that stuff out of the ground. And the state isn't receiving its due.
Your point's well taken. But Steve, I was just asking on the...
Yeah, I believe California is part of a coalition of states and some Canadian provinces that ultimately want to have a market that operates over that geographic area. But I'm not sure any of the other American states are up and running. So I think we're pretty much out there on the bleeding edge like we usually are.
And Steve, could you just give a quick overview of MTC's approach to the cap and trade money coming into our region, how we've prioritized? I think that it would be important for the council to hear that.
Yeah, and, you know, this is another case where we're spending money before we've got it. But I think one way to try to go get new money is to come up with a plan of how to spend it. Then you've got something to fight for. And so that was our strategy. And in December, the commission adopted some broad categorical framework for cap and trade with all the actual rules and the competitive selection processes to be named later, if you will. The one exception to that was the first category having to do with core capacity, which is essentially trying to reinvest in the major transit operators by essentially replacing their entire fleets, Muni, AC Transit, and BART. That's a lot of vehicles, a lot of buses, a lot of rail cars. Another idea is a competitive program for transit operations so that we can expand service where we think it makes the most sense. There was one for the OBAG program. If we do come across some new money, whether it's cap and trade or somewhere else, I think OBAG is something we want to build on. And in this case, there was a significant amount earmarked for that. Another category for freight and goods movement, another one for what we call our climate initiatives program, which are some of the more technologically oriented activities, as well as bike sharing and things like that. So in broad strokes, that's what the commission laid out. Now, obviously, this year, the legislature is going to be, and I think the Brown administration this year wants to engage on the subject, the legislature is going to be making some law on how the cap and trade revenue is going to flow and what the ground rules are going to be and so on and so forth. And the good news is we're in the game. The governor's budget includes $100 million for things like what I was just talking about. The bad news is that's about five times less than what we wanted. And it also is proposed to be routed through the Strategic Growth Council, which is probably a state outfit that you've never heard of before. And we would prefer that the money be directly sent to the MPOs in California, like MTC, because we're used to handling fairly large sums of transportation money from the state already. So we've got our work cut out for us, but I think the ball is in play, and I think that's an obvious place that we'd like the advisory council to be thinking with us through as we go through the year.
Thank you, Steve. Committee members? Yes. Mark.
Yeah, and bear with me, MTC members, you've probably heard this, but I just want to emphasize our work proximity housing program that's been proven in Napa County that addresses the real nexus between those who are working and getting to their place of work. We subsidize buyers of new homes 10% of the price of that home if they're buying within 15 miles of where they work. It's a no interest loan, so subordinate to the main loan, so it's treated as cash. So it basically helps with a down payment. It's paid back at some future time when they either sell or refinance the home at 10% of that future value. So it's just what mom or dad might do for you if you were buying a home. We have with about $1.3 million committed. We have 42. Low to moderate income buyers in homes today. As a result, actually 60% of those are low income buyers who are homeowners in Napa now. As a result, we had one couple move from Sacramento to Napa because of the program, which, and I think we estimate about 15,000 miles per year reduced in travel time and all the consequences of that. It works with the real economy because everybody knows the affordable housing is that housing that is probably 30 years old. And so getting people into that housing and getting them into ownership is an anti-displacement mechanism, because once they're in ownership, they're no longer forced out of the community because of higher rents. So it's a very effective program. It actually pays itself back, enables homeowners to actually, or renters to actually get into home ownership, accumulate wealth, and be permanent members of those communities. And I think overall it will help the entire market by allowing the rest of us to build the housing that the economy actually is demanding at the moment. I understand there is state legislation to make it a model program, but I just keep bringing it up because it addresses these issues of the workforce, really making a strong nexus between the workforce and the location where they're buying their homes. So getting them to, instead of just building more housing and hoping that people move closer to jobs and transit, actually having a nexus where the program actually requires that they move closer to their workplace, and presumably it could be worked where they're moving closer to transit. So it's a program. It's been demonstrated. It works. It wasn't easy. We had to get Fannie Mae approval and different things to make it work. But it's an approved program. It works. And Napa County would be happy to assist anybody in making it work in their community.
Very good. Okay, yes, Sylvia. Yes.
In Marin County, we have two concerns that would spill over into other counties as well. We have a limited amount of affordable housing in Marin, and we find that it's difficult to place homeless individuals into a home when there is no housing. So this is a great area to expand on so that we can cover another issue that's affecting all of us, is the homelessness. So if we can find some affordable homes to place them into, we can roll our apartment owners over into Mark Luce's program into a mortgage. And the other area that I'm concerned is I hear in Marin County that the One Bay Area Plan just was not known. People didn't know about it. They said after all the planning, after all the information that we put out, that they just didn't know about the program. Now here we are 4 years in advance of our RTP, and it's important that we educate and bring in the community. Of course, we want positive input and we want information, but we have to ensure that the public knows what's going on, what will happen in 4 years, and a timeline for those next 4 years.
Okay. Other comments? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Well, Linda Jeffrey Sailors. I would like to comment on the fact that I heard we were talking about goods movement and 580. And if any of you have paid attention to the news in the last month, we've had at least three major accidents involving big rigs that have completely shut down 580. And the only thing that's moving on 580 during those times is BART, which doesn't quite go to Livermore yet. So
Scott's working on that.
Oh, I know he is.
Very good.
Scott.
But anyway, I think because of the air problems that it causes and everything else, that we really need to look at that entry into the Bay Area and make sure that it's improved.
So that's a 580 corridor.
Let me go a little different direction. As elected officials all sitting here, your responsibility, as I understand, as we understand it, I think, is that you look at the big picture. And so trying to tie all of these issues in to a commonality, I'm hoping that one of the things that you're all looking at is the demographics change over the next 4, 10, 12 years. And the statistics that's involved in the One Bay Area and actually throughout the state and other areas are the major growth is with seniors and also, minorities. And so trying to integrate that into what needs to happen for transit, for housing, and it's the demand that's going to place on additional services and how do people get to these services in my mind, should be a clear package. And at the same time would say, good luck with that. I mean, we all have individual issues in our county we recognize in Napa County we're a blip on the screen compared to San Francisco County, but maybe we're looking at that big picture and reaching out with our needs in a different way. But sometimes it doesn't always start with with the transit, but the transit has to tie in terms of the PDAs, in terms of how we look at where the placement of facilities or low-income housing is in relation to services. So I think that where we intersect the most with a One Bay Area plan does tie that together. So good luck.
Major?
Actually, just to follow up on that, I think you're absolutely right. I think that's going to be a critical component of the Bay Area plan and just all of our transit dollars in general. In our county, we've done a few different things. We've done older driver safety seminars, so since we're living longer, we're driving longer, we want to be safer. And the misnomer that seniors are the worst drivers, not true. The youngsters are. The problem is the seniors get hurt more seriously when they do get in an accident. So that's an area where we need to do a lot more outreach. We've had a senior mobility plan in San Mateo County, trying to get ambassadors to get seniors, and not so much even seniors, but as you get to be 40s, 50s, if you're not used to taking buses, it's hard to get people to take buses. But we've done a lot of ambassadorships to try to get people to try the bus system in our county because, at some point you're not going to be driving, and we need to get the seniors around. And then the other thing, paratransit, as the numbers of seniors goes up and they sign up, that's the most expensive operation for transit is the paratransit system. And our county, fortunately enough, passed a half-cent sales tax, so we put $5 million in this year and $5 million next year to augment that for SamTrans. But, it's only going to get bigger. So I do think we need to do a lot more education around getting people to understand that the bus systems are really well usable. They provide a lot of things on those buses today that they didn't in years past, where they kneel to the sidewalk, where they can take wheelchairs. So you don't necessarily need paratransit. You just need to have the opportunity to start learning what's out there. And that will save us probably a lot of transit dollars if we could get more people to do the outreach in those areas. We talk about it a lot, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure I see as much of that happening. And you should do it now before the crisis arises later.
Could I just add to that the program that reimburses volunteer drivers in the smaller communities could be very successful because, people who are looking for volunteer opportunities, particularly younger seniors looking to help older seniors, that's another financial resource that's beneficial.
Okay. Yes.
Hi, I have a question. What is the capacity of MTC to get communities, whether it's cities or counties, to follow through with some of the plans that, get out there? I think recently the Peninsula has been a major driving force for employment in the Bay Area, which has been fantastic for job growth. But, you know, across the country, even in the New York Times, they talk about the housing crisis in the Peninsula and why aren't there 20 and 40-story condos at $1 million a pop filling up that corridor along Highway 101, which is actually where the jobs are. I operate a business in downtown Hayward, and after the Loop construction, which has been very detrimental to downtown Hayward's pedestrian and biking, and that prioritizes cars coming through downtown Hayward who are primarily going down to the San Mateo Bridge and working in the Peninsula. Whereas, and I'm a huge believer in raising capacity, but ultimately, if the communities which are adding thousands and thousands of fantastic, high-paying, over 100K jobs, but that those communities don't want to put in housing, and we're not talking about low-income or workforce housing, we're talking about $1 million of condos, does the MTC have a way or a plan in approaching that problem? Because I think ultimately we're just getting more sprawl where people want, and these are people with money.
Scott, did you want to comment on it?
Yeah. No, I think that's a critical point. I know we've been trying to do this a little more, and I've talked about this, Steve and I have talked about this before. We need to do a much, much better job of tying transit investment to housing production. It's really hard because obviously we don't control zoning. That's a local matter, and I know we've had a lot of discussions with ABAG about housing projections and so forth. But we do have, when it comes to transit funding, we have, to an extent at least, the power of the purse. And it makes no sense to be, if you have areas that are refusing to add meaningful amounts of housing, which has ramifications for the whole region, so the lack of housing in San Mateo County sometimes can have ramifications in San Francisco. And to be making huge transit investments and not insisting that we have transit-oriented development. And I say this not just, you know, I sometimes think in San Mateo County, as we're electrifying Caltrain, I'm a huge supporter of that, we should be pushing for more housing around these Caltrain stations. But I also hold San Francisco accountable as well. It is my view that even within San Francisco, there are parts of the city that are extremely resistant to adding one stitch of new housing. Yet people want us to expand muni service there. And whereas there are other parts of San Francisco that are accepting a lot of new housing and not getting enough new transit service. I look at my district and parts of Market Street taking a lot of new housing, and the subway is over capacity. And so I think we need to be much stronger in frankly, conditioning at least certain types of transit investments on an agreement to add certain levels of housing.
Yeah, Dave.
Thanks, Jim. I certainly agree with Commissioner Weiner on, you know, the idea that we have to do as much as we can locally in terms of investment. But he would probably agree with me that, you know, even with our best efforts, the kind of dollars that we have available locally are kind of a drop in the bucket relative to the kind of need that you're talking about, the kind of massive investment that you're talking about. And something that we have begun to work on a little bit, at least in terms of integrating it into our policy documents, is the idea that we need to encourage at the federal government level and any other level where it may come from, credit enhancement tax incentives for that kind of development. That's why, if you look at the landscape, particularly of higher density or multifamily housing, you see just a huge production drop off in inventory. Even an amateur, you know, driving around can see that after the mid 1980s, there's just a tremendous drop off in inventory, and it had to do with the last tax reform act or the tax reform act of that time, and the fact that you don't see quite the federal investment opportunities, credit enhancement opportunities that you used to see in terms of programs, although there are still some. And then the other thing is, and I'm going to speak as a Santa Clara County person, you know, we, without jumping into or opening up a completely separate subject, when you look at local general plans, they've got to be more flexible in terms of what's allowed and what's not allowed. Market conditions can't operate in an unnatural environment that says you can do this, but we won't be ready for that for 8 years, or you can do this, but not until this occurs first. Really, without getting into the weeds, you know, some of our general plans, I think, including in San Jose right now, are so buttoned up that it's very, very difficult to respond to the natural investment that does want to occur. So what I'm trying to say is, I think there's things the commission can be directly involved in, of course, that are limited, but then, you know, I think it's important for us all to be, you know, taking our turns at bat when it comes to trying to get some of these larger issues addressed. And I'll close by just saying, when I was on the city council in San Jose, before I was on the county board of supervisors, when I was on the city council during that 8 years, we regeneral planned every major rail corridor in San Jose for high density development, and virtually none of it has occurred. It's not for lack of a willingness to do that kind of development in our area. So I don't know what's going on exactly in the peninsula, but what I'm trying to say is, even in areas that have been aggressive about making those general plan changes and allowing the entitlements to occur, it just, all the things I said just a few minutes ago have not complemented the land use changes that we've made, and so the production hasn't taken off. And I raise that not to explain away or pass the buck, but to say I think that those issues need to be on the radar here. We have, you know, powerful lobbyist teams, including our own staff here at MTC, that deal with Washington all the time, and at some point in time there's going to be opportunity to make some changes in some of those rules, regulations, and laws. Thank you for raising the issue. It's a great issue.
I just want to expand on what Dave said in MTC's role. If you look at where MTC was 20 years ago and you look at where we are today when it comes to transportation and land use planning, it's just light years. And, you know, if you're new to it, you're saying we're not doing enough. But if you looked at what it was several years ago, where we were doing nothing. We had our TLC, you know, Transportation Livable Communities. We got the PDAs. Where I think MTC really has to focus is on educating the counties and local communities on the importance of land use and transportation planning. And I always remember, you know, when we first launched the TLC program, we had a meeting in Richmond, and we were meeting with planners, and MTC staff was there, and we went through what the goals and objectives of the TLC, and the planning director says, God, why aren't we doing this, you know, and they get it. But we just really haven't gotten that message out, I think, enough. I think Commissioner Wiener's point about linking the funding to the land use development around those investments, I think is imperative. I think, you know, I come from a very rural county, and I support what Supervisor Wiener is saying. And it's important that we make that linkage, because if we don't, I don't think there's going to be a lot of incentive to make those right land use changes, especially when we're talking about spending billions of dollars in the transportation infrastructure, that it has to have a land use component and there has to be a strong connection.
Yeah, I wanted to just pick up for a minute in terms of what your role has been in this last couple of years, because if you look at Plan Bay Area, local jurisdictions have been doing planning for the last 20 years in terms of looking to their downtowns, to their centers, to say how can we've set our urban growth boundaries. How do we provide housing within our communities? And the reflection of that are these the priority development areas that are designated by local cities. These are planning structures that are put in place, and our plan through the OBEG, the Bay Area Grant Program, is to provide funding to support those development efforts. As Commissioner Cortese mentioned, that, you know, we also need some reforms and money flowing through the finance world to be able to do some of these things. But the other thing, I think, just back to the advisory council, and we heard a comment from one of the counties, I think that you're going to be playing a very important role in the next few years as counties grapple with the conversation of actually implementing this plan. Because we've seen across the region how the the cities and the counties have put together these housing plans, and then when they start to hit the ground, it's a whole new conversation. And I know your commitment around this table, as you have expressed, the importance of having housing for seniors, having low income, having workforce housing, it's really going to be important to groups like our commission, as well as the advisory council at the local level, to be part of that discussion, because we all have to share this. So I think that was the other thing, as you're looking towards implementation, I think it'll be helpful for you to give us feedback as to what do you feel the barriers are to implementing them in your own local counties, and then collectively, and how do we move to the next next steps in terms of putting these plans, actually these living documents, and then making them real.
Just briefly, it's fun to hear people's ideas and thinking, representing BCDC and thinking about climate change. I know that one of the things that we all agree on is that we have to be attentive to making our region sustainable 50 years from now, so that people are able to live here. And all of our planning is headed towards connecting, diminishing people's carbon footprints, and trying to connect their put the nexus between work and home, and diminishing the impact they have on things. So I think I'm greatly frustrated by the fact we can't get to the public as well as we should, so that they understand what we're trying to do, because most of them probably want the same thing, but we don't get the point across. One of the most effective things I think that's happened is the Spare the Air Days. If we had more indicators, and as you're thinking about this, I think it would be helpful as you do your work, think about indicators that would motivate the public to understand the values we're trying to get across with Plan Bay Area. I don't know exactly what they are, but when I think about projects that are proposed in San Francisco, for instance, big projects that are big attractors for people from the region, if we propose to put them away from transit, we're really creating a problem. So there ought to be a way that we motivate and incent developers and projects to be close to transit without a penalty necessarily, but with the public ought to understand the value of that. I find that many of my friends don't even get that. I mean, for instance, thinking about the Lucas project at the Presidio, it's a great idea, or whatever they put there, but to have no transit access to a major project is kind of crazy. So I think we need to do more thinking and more public awareness. And if you have ideas about how to make that happen, I think it would be great.
Ms. Marion, if I could. Yeah, I just want to weigh in. The other thing that we're working on is maybe a more streamlined CEQA approach, and I can just speak freshly from my own experience. The success of the Work Proximity Project is great. Another investment, county's got about $3 million tied into an affordable housing project. Local lawsuit on CEQA issues got sent back to study some small issue for another 8 months, and the landowner who was willing to sell the property is ready to walk away. And so that project won't happen after years of trying to make that happen. And that's just one story. I think, if you're a developer, and you guys can weigh in, predictability is probably the most important thing. To be able to see the end of the tunnel and know that you're going to get there, and CEQA just prevents that. So you're not going to build in those transit corridors because you don't know if you're going to get there. And you can't tie up millions and millions of dollars with the hope that seems to have been proven over and over again, you're not likely to get there. So, I know it's sort of like the third rail talk about CEQA because, you're anti-environment. Well, unfortunately, CEQA isn't used to protect the environment anymore. It's used to protect labor unions, and it's used to protect NIMBYs, and rarely gets to real environmental issues because those are pretty much obvious on their face. I understand under the ARENA bill that recently passed, there is some streamlining for CEQA projects that sort of meet our definition of a priority development area. It doesn't eliminate CEQA, but it sort of streamlines it so there aren't quite as many hurdles to clear to get a project and get some assurance that it's going to get built. But I think our job is to continue to look at that issue, because if we're going to get housing built, we have to fix that problem. And we're going to have to continue to look at that, educate people on what it means, and if it doesn't do everything it needs to do, we need to do more in that area.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Yes.
I just had a question on we, especially with One Bay Area and our general plans. It's one thing to establish plans and priorities, but it's when we get to the implementation, and as elected officials, you know that any plan that's in place can be overturned depending on who's on the dais voting that night. So how do we circle that back around to the commitments that the communities have made through One Bay Area? Because I personally don't want to see people getting grant money to do planning processes only to know that down the road, 4 years from now, it's just going to be set aside by whoever's sitting there, unless Supervisor Cortez is there and can argue for me. So I want to know how in the future we might be able to build that back in so that you're getting those kinds of reports. Because right now my frustration is I can yell at my planners, but who cares? You know, it's not coming back to you guys.
Yeah, I don't know if Steve or one of our staff want to kind of respond to that. I mean, you're raising an issue that we are very concerned about, is investing money in these PDAs or other areas linking transportation, land use, and then having it overturned. And so you're raising a very important issue. Steve?
Well, I think it's a question about leverage. I mean, I think you've been using the term linkage, and I would use the term leverage. And I think it is an area where the commission could do more and where the advisory council could help the commission think that through. You know, we've got one program at least, this transit-oriented affordable housing program, that's a direct investment into housing production. And I think that is something that some commissioners have applauded. I think it's something that makes some commissioners nervous, because their view is, look, we got these gaping shortfalls in our public transit and transportation systems. We're going to spend money in this other area now. So leverage, I think, is an answer to that question. And when you look back at the land use linkage that we established with our transit expansion program, where we insisted on minimum amount of housing development along the transit corridor, I mean, that led to real changes along the SMART corridor in the North Bay that are going to happen as that train is built. When you look at the linkage we made with OBAG to having a certified housing element, and look, certified housing elements don't build housing, but you got to have the zoning if you're going to build it to start with. We used to have about 80-some jurisdictions in the Bay Area that had one. When OBAG made it a condition of getting OBAG money, we're now up to 108, and we've got one place in Albany, and then we'll be at 109. We'll have everybody. So I think to some extent we haven't quite reached far enough, I don't think, as a commission in maximizing our leverage. But you're raising the question, well, what if there's, I'll call it a double cross, right? What if they take your planning money and then they don't deliver? Well, the thing about OBAG is the formula is based upon your expected housing production and your actual housing production. Mm-hmm. And so if that is something that turns out to happen more often than not, then the communities that do come through are going to end up getting more money in the future, and the communities that don't will end up getting less. So I do think you need a way, over time at least, to keep an accurate accounting of who's really doing what you want and who's maybe playing the game. And that's part of, I think, this leverage question that I think is key to the commission's future. I mean, we're applying it in a different way with this core capacity program, where we're replacing the fleets for BART and AC and Muni, and we're telling them, look, that the old 80-20 match requirement doesn't apply to this one. You've got to do more than that. And that's leading San Francisco to develop ballot measures, and BART has socked away money. And again, it's a question of leveraging somebody else's money, because we just don't have enough ourselves.
Steve, could you, on the TOA fund, what is the return? I mean, we invested, what, $10
million? Yeah, talk about leverage. This is a case where we leverage somebody else for a change. Yeah. The first program, we got 4-to-1 leverage. So we put in $10 million. The private parties put in $40 million. The second version of it, I think the leverage came down a bit. We put in 10 and they put in 30.
Yeah, and so I just wanted to make everyone aware of that, that's, you know, I supported that because of the money that we were getting, that match, and we were getting a tremendous investment for that $10 million. Other comments, questions? Was there? Yes, sir.
One of the things that was done in San Mateo is they created a transit corridor, and in that transit corridor they did an EIR. It was a master EIR for a whole area. And that brought development, and that brought developers. And they've done the same thing in Redwood City. They've created master EIRs. So now you don't have to go through the whole EIR process. All you do is a neg deck. And that lessens the unknown factor that chases developers away, and it lessens the time factor. And that could be something we can encourage communities to do in the PDAs to help us get development in those areas, because the developer looks at it and says, well, at least this is covered.
Right.
And he can work within those parameters, or she can work within those parameters to build in those areas and make the investments that we need in those rail corridors.
Yes.
It's interesting that Alan brought that up. I was going to say, in our county, some of the bigger cities have been far more aggressive using that, or a precise planner, really setting out the parameters and being able to do a lot of high density. And on the flip side, we have some smaller cities where people get very vocal, and they take, you know, we just had a recent one where Samtrans had land, and we wanted to allow for some transit-oriented development, and they sort of come to an arrangement to have a significant number of houses or condos, and then they turned around at about quarter to midnight, and just out of the blue, one council member suggests, well, let's just lop off the top floor. No rhyme, no reason, does it pencil, does it? And that's what ended up passing. And so the decision we have to make at Samtrans, which I think hopefully bodes well if they don't turn it around, is we're not going to sell that property to them. I mean, if you have prime real estate and that community takes a project and totally minimizes what the whole purpose of that property was, then we're rewarding bad behavior. And, you know, we're still working on it now with them, but, you know, we have to be careful that we don't just roll over and play dead as well. And so that's, and the hardest part, some of our cities are very, very small. We have 20 cities in our county. So some cities work better, create these plans, and others, you know, it's who screams the loudest at the meeting instead of going out to the rest of the community and figuring out, just because you have 10 people screaming, what about, you know, the 26,850 that aren't there that night? And we have a tendency to just listen to the ears of those that come to those. Having sat on a council, I know how that goes. You have to get out there and figure out, is this really how the community feels, or is there a bigger picture here? Oftentimes you'll find out there's a bigger picture, but those individuals don't necessarily come. So I would suggest the more you're out there in your community, the more you encourage people to either participate or at least let their councils know that they do want to see some things happen in the corridors, because San Mateo County certainly could use more.
Yeah, good point. Bob?
Yeah, just because we got a little bit on the housing side, I would agree 100% with Steve. I think that one of the great benefits of the Bay Area plan was the One Bay Area grant. Obviously, it would be great if we had a lot more money, if there was more of a carrot and stick attached to that. And from our perspective, that absolutely true. You know, we've battled with jurisdictions on general plans, on housing elements, and you know, the whole Bay Area. And having them all come at the front end of the cycle and doing that is a great benefit, I think, to everybody. And I would agree with Commissioner Weiner on the comments about, you know, providing monies to those folks that are actually building the housing. Certainty is exactly what we're looking for. And since you opened the door, the one point I think I wanted to make, I don't want to jump on the other housing comments that have been made, but it has to do with your brother and sister organizations or commissions and the impact that, you know, the sea level rise adaptation strategy was, in the business community's opinion, going to have on the Plan Bay Area and ABAG and MTC's ability to meet the goals of that, and then also the Bay Area Air Quality Management District. And I know Alan spoke to this at the last meeting, but the toxic air contaminant thresholds, you talk about incentivizing development around transit, which I think we all agree is important. That does just the opposite.
Right.
And so I think, you know, it's going to be a challenge for all of you to, as you work with those commissions, but then I think an opportunity for all of us on the Policy Advisory Council to try to find creative ways to maybe assist you in those efforts. So.
Okay. Yes.
Carlos.
Thank you. Gosh, there's been a lot of things I wanted to comment on, but let me try and comment on what's being said right now. I completely agree with Alan about the incentivizing developers, the EIR process, kind of making it more attractive for the developers to come in. And actually, I think the comment that was made by the commissioner about, because I know that some of us on the around the table or even in the Bay Area, some of the agencies actually own land, and being a little more flexible about dealing, and like I heard the instance in San Mateo, Samtrans, I guess, you know, and BART has the same issue. They're trying to RFP their land, and they can't find developers. And it's part of it is because they haven't done enough on the entitlements work, the in engineering work, to really have that opportunity to make it to incentivize the private sector to come in. And that's unfortunate, but it's something that we have to learn. And listen to what the developers are saying there. It's not that we have to roll over and just give in on everything, but there are things that are barriers to being able to actually, and so whether it's a board that says I just want to lop off a floor, and that's a nightmare for a developer, that you get to planning commission or you get to the council and suddenly they're just tinkering with your development like that. And it happens, and you know, I'm sure all of you know probably situations like that in your local city. So I think, you know, it's things that we all deal with in our own localities, and just kind of if we want to incentivize transit-oriented development, I think you've already heard it. So I'm really just paraphrasing what everybody else is saying here. I had another comment earlier. I don't want to change the flow here, but if I may, just for a moment. When Joanne was talking about the issue around the aging of our population, I do believe, as I looked at the work plan that we brainstormed in January, there is like one a kind of a thread through all the things. I feel that it covers so many of the different topics that we talked about. Is the how do we deal with the aging of the population, not just through transit. I think also the comments that were made about how over the last 20 years MTC has taken great strides in looking more than just transportation. I think that definitely has to be commended, because I've seen it and I do believe it, that it's not just simply transportation, that we are looking at land use and some of these things, like when we talk about smart growth, that's what we need to be thinking about, our aging population. Is not trying to keep extending our paratransit out to where everyone is living today, but maybe thinking about how do we make age-friendly communities for our seniors so they can come and live in areas, not saying the center of urban, you know, metropolis, not necessarily San Francisco, but even if it's in, you know, a tiny town in Napa or you know, that they're somewhere where they have the services around them, as opposed to having to figure out how to get the services out there. So this is just one of these things that I just saw it in thread in terms of transit improvement, smart growth, housing, and then also about safety, because a lot of times it's a concern about safety and security. And all those things, and I know I live in Oakland. I was going to also say, workforce housing, come live in Oakland. I mean, we have housing that's available. It's not as private, but I understand there's concerns about safety. And so to me, it's like, how do we deal with this? I know we're a transportation body, but all these things do affect the transportation and our healthy living here in the Bay Area.
That's a real good comment. You know, a place where I think MTC could do some services to focus on the paratransit service. You know, you heard Adrian talk about some of the services they're providing. I know we have in Solano County, we're dealing with some of this with our, you know, taxi script. There's a lot of very innovative things happening, and we need to find out what people are doing in these various counties, what's successful, what isn't. But paratransit is very expensive, but it can be done, I think, can be a lot better. And I would like to see MTC maybe take the lead on looking at what are some of the best practices in the region and where can we apply those practices. And, you know, a rural county like Solano is much different than downtown San Francisco is how we provide those services. But the very thing you're talking about, those communities, you can accommodate that in the smaller towns and in the rural counties. And so that would be something that hopefully we could explore a little bit more, talk about these senior issues, how we're providing those services in a more efficient way. Scott, yes. Yeah.
Thank you. First of all, I want to say that Commissioner Tissier's comments were music to my ears, and I know it is incredibly hard for policymakers to, you know, to sit in a room when you have a group of people who are all yelling at you about something. And I know when Gavin Newsom used to do mass swearing-ins of commissioners in San Francisco, he would always tell them, please always keep in mind that you are not just representing the people in the room, you're representing every single resident of San Francisco. But it's really hard to do. And we had a similar situation in San Francisco. I'm not just hard on other counties, I'm hard on our own community in San Francisco, where we had a project, 12-unit project, car-free, on-site affordable housing, 100% within zoning, no variances. It went through a 6-year process, and our Board of Permit Appeals, because they couldn't deal with, you know, a whole bunch of people coming in and yelling about the project, arbitrarily did the same thing, chopped off the top floor, reduced it from 12 to 9, and even worse, not only did we lose 3 units of housing, by reducing it from 12 to 9, that took it under the inclusionary threshold. So 2 of the 3 units that were lost were the affordable units. It was an absolute systemic policy failure. And so this is really a problem in a lot of different areas.
Yes.
I would also just make one follow-up on that, too, that kind of spans both implementing good plans as well as the public education component, and that is it's good stewardship of all of MTC's prior good work around, say, TLC and the station area planning grants that have laid the foundation for these to see those implemented. And it is hard, I know, when we have good zoning in place and even good planning in place to have projects basically re-adjudicating the plan every time. So I think that might be part of some of the education we could look into is reminding people that this isn't brand new.
Yeah. Ursula, before we run out of time, is this the discussion you were looking for? Is there anything you want
to... This is fantastic, yes, exactly.
On? Okay.
Yes.
So okay, yes, Amy.
Yeah. One more comment based on what Scott had to say. 6 years for a 12-unit project. That's the other problem we have. And the staying power for developers, I mean, that's a very small one, but the staying power, and that's, of course, the technique to not have these things happen. And I think, again, as elected officials, we have to encourage that we move things along faster because that's how you kill projects. And, you know, to think that that small a project took 6 years to happen, it should take a year at the most. But I just use that because we go through this constantly everywhere, and I think if we can encourage things to move a little faster, that would be helpful.
And we've had some projects that 30% of the project was just getting through the environmental and meeting these requirements. And that's money that you're taking out of that can build housing units. And so, Bijan, I noticed you're here, Caltrans. Did you have any comments on what you're hearing? And I know you don't build housing or anything, but you certainly provide a lot of the infrastructure that services it.
No, we don't build housing, but certainly pressures that are put on our system because of the lack of linkage or because of the separation of housing and where the work is tremendous. Recognizing that we're not about building a whole lot of freeways, we're not extending freeways to new areas, having better transit, having moving people on other modes is important, I think. The agency is moving in that direction, recognizing just that. And the monies that we need with respect to our maintenance of our system is not enough for what we have set aside from what some of the plans are as part of our expansion. So we're going to be focusing on more of a preservation in our system and certainly in support of the complementary other modes of transportation that reduces the impact on the system, reduces greenhouse gases, and freight movement is also a very important element that we're working both at the state level and here in this region and also with Alameda County taking some lead on the freight. So certainly this is a very positive conversation that we're having with respect to putting the work plan together in support of not just transportation but housing too.
That's good. Okay, other comments? Yes.
One last comment on the, I think we had a meeting in Napa put on by MTC, and we ran into Agenda 21. And I assume somewhere there's an answer to their agenda, because I got a copy of their book, not autographed, but I'll share it. But there's a lot of stuff written there, and I know that there's a counterpoint to it, and I just haven't seen it come out of MTC from yourselves, or how are we going to resolve it again? We talk about education of the public. How would you like to go to a meeting like that and run into this group and have them try to take over your meeting? Would you go back again? You know, so we have to rethink that. I appreciate those meetings, but we have to think of the general public coming to those meetings. Thank you.
You know, on that issue, the problem with the Agenda 21, this is the UN Agenda 21, is that they have some sound principles in there. You know, if they would have put in there highway safety is important in Agenda 21, does that mean we should abandon highway safety? And unfortunately, they put some things in it that I think are good. And, you know, I don't support Agenda 21, but there's some elements in it that are, you know, when you start talking about land use and transportation, you talk about, you know, some of the individual components of it. And so we can't abandon those from our plan because they're good for what we're doing. And it's unfortunate. It just kind of mirrored what was in that plan, what we were trying to do. We weren't following it. It's many of the things that we were doing is, I think, are the right things to do. And that's the problem with that, is that some of the principles in that Agenda 21 are very similar to what we've adopted. But we didn't follow that as a guide. Our plan was almost completed when I first heard of Agenda 21. I never even heard of it. And so I don't know that our staff was familiar with it either. And the one thing, we looked at a document that's probably 20 years old, an ABAG document that references Agenda 21. That certainly didn't help, because they kept showing us that. And so, but that's the unfortunate thing. And I think you're right. There should be some explanation made on a regional basis as to Agenda 21, because we're getting painted with a brush that I don't think serves us very well. So I appreciate you raising that point. Okay, we're getting pretty close. To,
right. Okay, is that, so, okay, thank so you so much,
Mr. I'm going to turn it back over to you.
For the facilitation that you did. Thank you so much for that. Very good. Excellent. We have one public comment. Jane Kramer, before we conclude.
Coming to help you, Jane.
Can you hear me?
Okay.
Yeah, it works. Okay. So the topic is health and its relevance to transportation and resilient communities. How, in practical terms, does man promote and enhance his adaptive abilities as he builds an effective regional transportation system that contributes to local community resiliency? Here are some suggestions. 1. Broaden and expand health insurance coverage to include alternative medical outlooks and technologies, including ecological medicine. It's called preventive medicine, and you get the most for your money from it. Ongoing self-induced health costs very little. You heard that. 2. Provide educational opportunities that come with ecologically safe jobs and workplaces, and use them to build local economies that neighborhoods support. It does no good to build housing that meets LEED specifications if the people living in them work all day long in coal mines. The canary has already expired. 3. Begin in earnest to support research that seeks out existing human life processes that we have as yet not begun to explore. How does, for instance, a healthy autoimmune system work? Or maybe ESP is real? How about imagery and self-induced healing? Apparently, the Navajo shaman knows something important that the rest of us choose to pass up. And four, it may put those in this room between a rock and a hard place, but open discussion within communities on the issue of reducing population growth needs to finally happen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much for your comments. So thank you, everyone, for participating, especially thanks to the commissioners for your time. We really appreciate it. I don't know, Kathleen, if you want to say any final words before I turn it over to Chair Worth. Okay, so we're going to be taking this information. We've had diligent note takers, and the council will be working on their work plan with this wonderful conversation. So thank you so much, and I'm going to turn it back to Chair Worth. Thank you.
Advisory Council Chair, for your summary remarks, and then we'll conclude.
Thank you. So. I think a lot of what was revealed today was a greater degree of shared understanding of what some of the challenges are to implementation. So even being that we're confronting that and addressing that challenge, to me, is a sign of progress just in today's conversation alone. So I know that us on the council will look forward to hearing and continuing to hear how we can best provide feedback on some of those cross-agency issues, localization and education issues. But I feel like there was a really good shared understanding around the table, so I thank you for that.
Well, Kathy, thank you very much for that summary, and I want to echo those thanks to all of you. Clearly, having been involved in this planning process for the last few years and looking at the matrix, the way the feedback from the council is that you all are very committed to the work that's been done and moving it forward. And hearing the conversation today, you know, I can see that there's a lot of understanding and there's a lot of, frankly, concern that we want to be able to take this plan to the next level. You know, I may be dating myself, but when I graduated college, there was a huge movement to go from large institutions to community-based institutions and providing services and discussion. And I think what we're hearing, and I think to follow up on Commissioner Halstead's comments and Randy, your concerns about how do we ensure that we take it to the next steps, is this whole next step of we need to be doing more community-based conversations. And I think your comment is mindful. We need to be looking at our planning grants. Are they providing adequate amount of community-based planning? So it's not just the planners, not just the, you know, typical groups that plan a development in a community, but that there's a much more robust discussion. And really, how do we engage the community? Because truly the challenge. So we're going to look to you in your individual counties, too. You can bring that perspective. I know the first comments we were hearing about, you know, Marin. Okay, so how do we have these conversations in the counties so that everybody, you know, under RENA and California has a commitment, has a view that we've shared historically for the last half century, that each community in the state takes on its responsibility in terms of not only is planning for future housing needs for all levels. So I think that this has been your role is going to be really important in terms of helping the commission, helping us as we move forward to with the broad policies. But we really need help in terms of, from your expertise, the communities and the issues that you deal with, where do we need to have these conversations? Because we want to have this a living process, and as we talked throughout the last few years, a plan that builds for our children and our grandchildren and maintaining the economic vitality of our region for our residents of all incomes and all priorities. So I think you're going to play a particularly important role in the next couple of years as we look to some of the policies that we have in terms of how do we keep moving this plan forward in terms of implementation. And Commissioner Spearing, I'd just like to thank you for your leadership. I won't say that you were there with Moses when the tablets came down, but almost. But I think Commissioner Spearing has been an incredible leader in the whole concept of bringing together transportation investment and land use patterns. And the success that we've seen is very much in part to his leadership. So thank you so much for, and all of you, for your participation, and to our staff. I really wanted to give a lot of credit to the MTC staff. I know that they really enjoy working with the Advisory Council and helping
you know, frame the discussion so that we can get very productive feedback in terms of really hearing from all of you in terms of what you think the priorities are. I think we've got a good, we all have a good working plan in terms of working together, and we really look forward to hearing from you. And I also wanted to say, if you have any questions, if you want more information on anything, there's a wealth of information, and if we can help you at the local level as you're involved in the conversations in your local counties and areas, that we as an organization stand to help support that effort too. So thank you all for being here and your ongoing work. We look forward to working together in the coming year. So the meeting is adjourned.